I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
I'm Casper Van Dien, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hi, I'm Christos Gage, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
I pack my clothes and grab my single issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collection's complete.
Time ago in a galaxy far away, my good friend Mike Manning called me and said we're doing a podcast from the deep, deep space of Louisiana. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing excellent. May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you also. And my good friend Joshua Opper over in the Death Star known as Boston. How you doing over there, my friend?
Just sharpening up my lightsaber. The old-fashioned way, I might add.
The old-fashioned way, indeed. And how you doing there tonight, LT?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing great. I'm still in Memphis, but I'm on my way to the Death Star known as Boston. And this, of course, is Thinking Outside the Long Box. And today we're doing a very special episode called Marvel in Space. Now, once again, we finally got Neil deGrasse Tyson on the line to explain what space is. Dr. Tyson, can you tell us what space is?
Oh, man, Skype is just,
Skype?
Just dropped him.
Yes. Again?
I tell ya. For a scientist, you think he could figure out Skype?
He never gets to update. He just doesn't get the updates.
He's an older guy. He's like, Skype? What Skype?
Smype. What Smype?
Well, let me explain space really quickly. It's everything else that's not Earth. And today we're going to be talking about what happens when Marvel characters have to venture out into that. Now, last week we did DC in space, and that was wildly popular. At least we had a good time. And today everyone's going to take a couple of minutes and talk about some of their favorite Marvel characters who venture out into the vast unknown. And Mike, why don't you start us off?
When I think about space, I think about insects. I think about the most dangerous dangerous foes the X-Men have ever faced. I think about the Brood. I know what you're thinking out there. Who's the Brood? These are these insect-like creatures that not only have exoskeletons, but they're so tough they have endoskeletons also. They are so tough, they burrow into space whales and fly them around the galaxy, messing with the Shi'ar Empire and coming into conflict constantly with the X-Men. They were first introduced in 1982 in Uncanny X-Men number 155, created by Chris Claremont and Dave Cochran. Now, I know what you're thinking. This sounds like a ripoff of Aliens. True, Aliens in 1979, but if you go further back, 1959 Starship Troopers, Heinlein, created the whole bugs and everything. So that whole scenario has been around for a while. But the Brood... every time I open up an X-Men comic and see the Brood, I feel the horror that the X-Men do. They're my favorite space villain of all time. Now, there are also a couple other Brood that are actually pretty famous in addition to the Brood Queen. One is No Name, who appeared in Planet Hulk. He was disconnected from the Hive and was one of the gladiators in the arena that Hulk had to fight in and ended up becoming an ally of the Hulk. And the other one is a little alien Brood called Brew, and he was first seen in Astonishing X-Men Volume 3, Number 40, created by friend of the podcast, Christos Gage. Brew was not violent like the rest of the Brood, and so he's actually considered a mutant for the Brood. Now, normally they would just kill off an abnormality like that, but because the Brood population had taken such a hit, they decided to let the abnormality live and just left them there, and the X-Men took him in, and he became a member at the Jean Grey School for the Gifted. Mm.
I love The Brood also, but my favorite Brood comic of all time was X-Men 143, Guess What Came Down the Chimney, starring Kitty Pryde, and that was the first time I fell in love with that character, Kitty Pryde. You guys remember that comic?
I love that. It's one of my favorite covers.
It is. I'm looking at it right now. It's Kitty Pryde during Christmas. She's left alone at the mansion to fight a Brood alien that had somehow snuck upon the ship. Now, we sometimes say that the Brood are a ripoff of aliens. And how does Kitty Pryde kill this particular alien? Do you remember, Josh?
I do not.
She turns the engines of the Blackbird jet on it. Now, I'm pretty sure that's one of the ways they killed it in the movie, too, right?
That truly, truly is one of the ways that they killed the queen in Aliens.
That's right. They just turned the jets on into one of the starships and just burned her alive. Exact same kind of way to kill it. But that I've only seen Kitty Pryde one time prior to that, and that was in the Dazzler special. Of course, it all comes back to Dazzler, of course. And so that was my real big introduction to Kitty Pryde, and of course, I fell in love with that character.
So my first introduction to Kitty Pryde was in the Teen Titans Uncanny X-Men crossover, and I thought they were advertising a cat litter brand.
Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde.
Kitty Pryde. That Pryde, what you make.
Hey,
even if it just shit.
Your cat's not just going through a phase.
Oh,
Kitty Pryde.
Snap,
see how I did that?
I saw that. I totally caught that.
All right, Josh, why don't you tell us what your favorite Marvel in space is?
Oh, but so, I got to say, though, staying on the Brood, I absolutely love the X-Men cover with Wolverine, who's been infected by the Brood. I thought that was one of the best covers.
Oh, yeah, where it's kind of bursting out. Yeah, that was a really good one.
Yeah, Wolverine via chest burster.
Yeah, one of the few mutants that can survive that. Like, damn it, what's this? It's like a cold
off the Alien series.
So I picked the Starjammers. Okay, so the Starjammers, you know, poor Dave Cockrum created the Starjammers. Totally, Marvel totally told him he was getting his own series. And then they tugged his heartstring along on the Starjammers for like two or three years. And finally he convinced apparently the person who looks like my father, Chris Claremont, in order to inject them into the X-Men. And Starjammers, the name became a little, let's say, inappropriate because Starjammers really just jammed their seed into the X-Men as because...
Much like the Brood did to Wolverine.
Because Chris Summers is the father of two of our favorite X-Men, Cyclops and Havoc, right? So it all started with his plane crashing and him and his wife strapping their two small children into a parachute and kicking them out of an airplane to let them survive and having them be sucked up into space by the Shire Empire and him learning the ins and outs of space travel in the Marvel Universe and basically becoming a pirate with my favorite character, Shod, who's just sort of this big finned-eared Hulk who kicks the hell out of people. I always just liked them that, you know, they were pirates. They were close-knit with the X-Men. They were has a stolen and parallel storyline with the Guardians of the Galaxy. And I just love the Starjammers. They were a underplayed and underutilized, and I wish they did get their own comic. And poor Dave Cockrum probably wishes they did too.
Quick question for you: did the Starjammers appear before or after Ice Pirates?
I don't know. That's a good call. Ice Pirates. Now, Ice from Pirates? Memory, Ice Pirates was probably what, 81?
84.
Oh, so yeah, Jammers was like 77 or 78, I think.
So they based Robert Urich's character in Ice Pirates off of Corsair. Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, by 100%.
I think that is absolutely true.
There was a striking resemblance.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about that. Someone read that comic book. It's too much for coincidence. LT, what's your favorite Marvel in space?
Well, I've got to say that recently, within the past couple of years, I really like the Original Sin storyline featuring the Celestial Peeping Tom and Couch Potato, known as the Watcher.
So wait, are we going to ignore the elephant in the room?
The actual sneezing elephant in the room?
Is that's what I was talking about.
So I sneezed.
It's not like you're on tape and everybody just heard it. That's fine.
I tried to get my mic up. It didn't work. Sorry.
Go on, LT. You were saying.
No, but no. Carry on.
So anyway, so the Watcher, whose only purpose in the Marvel Universe is to watch things. He tries not to interfere. He just likes to watch things. You know, I think he is truly the inventor of internet porn because that's all he does all day is watch things. But in the original Sin storyline, the Watcher gets killed, and many of the Marvel Universe characters are kind of roped into investigating who killed the Watcher. This series had a lot of twists and turns. I really like the concept of the man on the wall, the person who's supposed to just kind of hang out and look for alien incursions and stop them from happening, and who also kind of goes out and destroys threats to Earth without anybody knowing, this kind of selfless hero. I thought that was a really nifty idea, and kind of feel like if Marvel wanted to, they could go back to the original man on the wall in the series and probably do a whole series of pulp comics based on him.
Yeah, so. Original Sin was a very important series. Nick Fury takes over as the Watcher or the man on the wall. Is that correct?
It is, and he does that for a number of years without anybody ever realizing it. And he has tremendous amount of life model decoys that he just kind of deploys everywhere to kind of keep his activities as a man on the wall hidden.
At some point during Original Sin, Fury whispers something to Thor, and it causes Thor to no longer be worthy of carrying his hammer, which then ushers in the new Thor, and the old Thor becomes just called Odin's son. Is very important and very critical storyline that Marvel did.
What the hell did he say? It must have been filthy.
He's not Stephen Strange. He's not going to say something that filthy.
One-eyed filthy.
I'm just saying, it had to be pretty bad, right?
I can't think of anything so bad that Thor would be like, "Ooh, gotta put the hammer down." Sorry.
You know what? I'm not worthy. You're wearing panties right now, aren't you? All right, the hammer's down. Jesus.
I'm just putting it down right here. Whoever wants to pick it up can pick it up because I just put it down.
So you think it's more of a he did not know the shame that he had been holding inside him until Fury brought it out?
Could have been it.
That's right.
He's alive with that one eye, just like his father Odin. Oh, my God.
Oh, coincidence?
Not at maybe all. He told him he was his father.
In the dirtiest way possible.
In the dirtiest, filthiest way possible.
He described.
You know what?
He
hammers
described
down.
The conception.
This, I'm out.
Your dad wasn't polishing the hammer when you were a boy. He was not polishing the hammer.
Or they finally took too far, LT, man. Site and showed him all the possible categories.
I could picture Samuel Jackson going, I didn't even know you could get pregnant by doing it there. Gods, who knows about you freaking Norse god stuff?
Asgard.
I put it in her Asgardian. Two S's right there, my man. High five. You did the mom in the what? I'm putting the hammer down and I'm never coming back. And that's what happened. See it all now.
Yeah, we haven't got off topic at all.
About my... Charlie 27. Charlie 27 is going to be my topic for my favorite Marvel in space. Charlie 27 is kind of a little-known member of the Guardians of the Galaxy, but he was one of the guys that kind of captured my imagination because he was short, he was squat, and he was tough. Everything I wanted to be... but wasn't quite the tough part. I was short and squat as a kid, and Charlie 27 was pretty cool. Born on Jupiter and genetically engineered a miner and a soldier, Charlie 27 could lift approximately 3 tons. That got changed later when he was genetically modified again to be a little bit more, closer to 10 tons. He was a great soldier, a great member of the Guardians of the Galaxy. And the kind of, at that time, Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of using people from different planets, and those planets influenced what their superpowers was. Jupiter's heavy gravity made Charlie 27 a little bit shorter, a little bit squatter, and super strong and super durable. That was the kind of, hero I liked. I liked durable heroes who could dish it out, but they could really take it. And that's why I wanted to talk about Charlie 27. I wasn't just desperate to stop talking about why Thor had to put the hammer down. I really didn't want to talk about him.
But you did want to bring up a character that could really take it.
He could really, really take it.
And he did team up with Thor for a while.
It all comes back around. Speaking of coming back around, Josh, take us off on a tangent, will you?
Well, I think the space tangent is, what do you guys think of the future of privatized space flight?
Well, I'm really excited about it myself. I've seen that privatization works in a lot of industry in the United States and around the world. I think that privatization is really going to move us forward. as a ex-nuclear weapon specialist who is still using 8-inch floppy disks, that is true. Privatization is how we move things forward, and government influence is how we keep things kind of stalled.
Thoughts? I also think it'll make space travel safer. Because in the private sector, if they screw up, somebody who's paying to go on that space trip, their family is going to be suing.
Well, you can't really say that SpaceX has been safe yet. They've had almost as much problems as they've had victories. Just saying.
But have they harmed anyone? Most of that stuff's been unmanned.
True. Most of the stuff has been unmanned, and they did do their first successful landing in the ocean, which I think was really, really incredible.
I think this all goes back to 1979's TV show starring Andy Griffith, Salvage One. Do you guys remember that?
I remember Salvage One. That was awesome.
Remember Salvage One.
So Salvage One, the whole concept of it was Andy Griffith gets a rocket ship together to go up to the moon to steal all the stuff that the government left up there.
It was the first privatized spaceship, and no one thought it would work because the thrusters didn't rely on escaping Earth's gravity by force. It went slowly.
Yeah, get it?
Mostly it's because slow. The special effects sucked.
And they had to draw them out, too, because they didn't have a large budget.
They did. It was hilarious. So,
but maybe that theory is sound, because there was talk about instead of using rocket thrust, doing some of the heavy lifting with balloons to get people closer to the edge of Earth's orbit, and then using traditional rockets from there.
Which is exactly what Andy Griffin did, genius that he is.
He's a trendsetter.
Space balloons.
Space balloons. All right. Well, that's a pretty good tangent. Anyone else have any things on privatization of space? Neil deGrasse Tyson, are you back yet?
He was just on. Skype dropped him again. Neil,
and he really needs to get more bandwidth.
Neil, if you're listening, just update the Skype.
He's got like one bar. I was over at his house.
Dial up is dead, Neil.
Yeah, you hear that doot, 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 whenever he calls in. I'm like, come on, man.
That stuff.
Come on, man. All right. Why don't we take a look at what's in the front of the long box? Mike, what's in that front of that long box?
All right. In the front of the long box, I've got a image series called Birthright by Joshua Williamson and Andre Bresson. And I'm sorry to that person because I probably just butchered their name.
I'm guessing you did.
Yeah. It's a comic book that's set in modern times, but it also has a fantasy slant to it. The whole premise is a little kid named Mikey disappears, and then a year later, a grown barbarian shows back up claiming to be Mikey, who had just spent a whole bunch of time in this world of dragons and ghost kings and is here to protect his family and save the world. The whole premise is based on the fact that Mikey is actually been corrupted by the Ghost King and is trying to open up the portals to allow the Ghost King to come into the world. In exchange, Mikey gets to be back with his family, who he missed ever since he was a little kid. The storyline takes a quick turn at the first issue, and then him, Mikey, and his brother, it becomes a road tale of the grown Mikey, now with his older brother, who's actually still a kid, going on this adventure. If you are a fan of fantasy and you have a kid who's also a fan of fantasy, this is the series that I'd recommend you guys pick up and share together. If you're an adult and you don't have a kid to share it with, you're probably not going to like it as much. I thought it's a good series, but it's not a great series that's capturing my attention where I have to read every issue. But I think it would be a good comic book if you want to start reading with your son or daughter or niece or nephew or something. You want to get a comic that both of you can enjoy.
You know, Mikey, I read the first issue too. Mike, I couldn't have agreed with you more. I thought this was just an okay comic, not a great comic. You know, the whole idea of him kind of selling out his soul to the bad guy just to go home and see his parents one more time, I didn't find it truly compelling, and I think it might have just been that the writing was a little weak for me.
All right. Well, that's your opinion, as terrible as it is. What do you got in the back of the long box there, LT?
Well, in keeping with the space theme, I thought it was the Ron Thanagar Holy War. This took place in 2008. In this series, Ron had just kind of gotten rid of Lady Styx, but her influence was still very popular, and there was religious zealotry going on in Ron that was kind of steering people away from the traditional science that was so much the identity of Ron, and instead people became so incredibly devoted to Lady Styx, even though everybody thought she was dead. And similarly, on Thanagar, there was also religious uprisings going on and taking over. And, of course, when you get Ron and Thanagar in a story, they have to go to war because that's what they do. And it was all about this kind of Thanagar attacking Ron, and it was all kind of everybody being double played by Sinister and his coming back as this kind of celestial being. The start of this story arc was really good, and then in my mind it got a little weak towards the end because it got sort of, I'm Sinister and I've been here since the dawn of time and I'm here to take on God. It just got a little too big for its britches, I think. But overall, I would, you know, recommend reading it. The first parts were really good. So that's what I got.
Well, that sounds like a terrific one to find. What year was that again? Tell me, I missed that.
It was in 2008.
2008. I'll definitely go look that one up. That one sounds like fun. For my social relevance comic, I have one that I think is a lot of fun. I picked this one up, I think, 2 years ago down in New Orleans at the con. Mike's friend helped me get it. It is The Amazing Spider-Man versus The Prodigy.
Ooh.
And this was, yeah. And this was a comic book that was put out by Planned Parenthood back in, if I'm not mistaken, 1976. And it's all about, 1976. And it's all about an alien who comes to Earth to spread misinformation about teenage pregnancy so that teenagers will get pregnant in droves so that he can take them as slaves to his home planet because he needs child slaves. At one point, this alien who's wearing this terrible human mask says, "I love the way I get them to swallow all the sludge I hand out. Imagine they really think they can't get pregnant before you're 15, or if it's your first time, or if you only have sex once in a while. The fools!" This was a great little bit of propaganda put out by Planned Parenthood to get children and parents talking a little bit about pregnancy and the misinformation that's out there and why using birth control was important. This comic book, though leaning towards abstinence-only sex does talk a lot about what you can do to prevent teenage pregnancy. It was an early step to try to get people to think about and maybe even go to Planned Parenthood as an option. Planned Parenthood did publish this comic book with Marvel's consent. It's a very interesting read if it gives you a little bit of insight as to what people in 1976 were thinking about sex, especially when it comes to sex and children. So that was The Amazing Spider-Man versus the Prodigy, Volume 1. There was no Volume 2. Now, Mikey, we have one more interview that we can do from our good friends down in Pensacon. Who is that interview tonight?
We're going to be talking to Derek Donovan, artist extraordinaire. He also has wrote a book, which both LT and I have read. It's entertaining. It's a one-shot. LT, you got some original art from him, right?
I did get some original art. Unfortunately, I didn't get any from his original series. He didn't have any with him. His series is called Bionic Bombshells. It was a one-shot, and it was a little bit of a sort of Iron Man-type character that was, instead of being a self-made hero, she was thrust into it by her dead father. In order to get her inheritance, she had to basically don the armor and do some good.
I thought didn't you buy Jumbo Shrimp?
No, I talked to him about Jumbo Shrimp, which was one of the villains in the storybook is Jumbo Shrimp. He was a midget, or a little person, if you will, that his superpower was he became a giant, kind of like a Goliath or Giant Man. I really liked the comic. I thought it was pretty well done. I liked the artwork. I liked the idea of Jumbo Shrimp.
Yeah, it's just a romp of a good time. It's not something that you would take seriously at all. He did it. It's a fun book. If you're interested in picking it up, you can find it on Comixology. But let's let him tell you about it. Here's our interview with Derek Donovan.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan, and you're thinking outside the long box.
Now, sir, you are a professional artist, correct?
Yes.
And you've worked for some major comic book industry.
Yeah, I've worked for most of the publishers in North America. I've worked for DC Comics, Marvel Comics, Image Comics. Haven't made it to Dark Horse yet, but I've worked for smaller press guys in between there and stuff. So, yeah, doing it about 20 years now.
And did you go to school for that, or is that something you just developed?
No, it was a combination of always just drawing, you know, when I should be doing other things, and then one day going to a comic shop and meeting a pro that was older than me but trying to break into the majors, and I think that was the first time I equated, wait, I like to draw, there's a job where you can do this, you know, maybe that's my thing. And the more I learned about it, the more I was like, yeah, this is perfect fit, you know.
And who's your favorite character to draw for DC?
For DC, Batman and Superman are awfully fun. Yeah, The Flash is great. Wonder Woman's great. All of the Justice League characters, Martian Manhunter, all of those characters are super, super fun.
And what about over at Marvel? What do you like to draw?
Marvel's got lots of stuff. Marvel has a lot of really cool Kirby designs, which a lot of artists, including myself, are like, you know, give me Kirby designs. The Demon Etrigan at DC. He's a Kirby guy. That's great. But Marvel's just loaded with cool characters. Spider-Man, Galactus, Silver Surfer, Doctor Strange, you know, throw a rock, that's a cool character to draw.
Now, is it capes that you like to draw or action shots? What's your favorite style?
I like straightforward, superhero action, you know, there's a bank robbery and the Fantastic Four show up and somebody has to throw an armored car, you know. I like that kind of bombastic superhero action that you can, you know, that comics are known for, you know.
What did you draw for Image?
I did a Youngblood series with Joe Casey in about 2007, 2008. We did a few issues of Youngblood together. And now I'm doing another book with Joe Casey at Image. Right now the working title, I think, is Crunch Time, but it's like a 48-page one-shot type thing. And, yeah.
Now, you've also done your own comic book, correct?
Yeah, I recently did my first creator-owned comic with a Kickstarter called The Bionic Bombshell. It was just like a 20-page, intended to be just a one-shot thing, and I just wanted to have fun. I kind of wanted it to be kind of like The Tick and have kind of outlandish side of superheroes pointed at, and just had fun with it. And then I ended up inadvertently having like 10 more pages of material that I came up with during the Kickstarter that became the 10-page backstory, Just in Time versus the Time Toads of Krylos 8. And it's just a little 10-page fun thing.
Now, I picked it up on Comixology, and I thought it was great. Could you tell some of our listeners the awesome villains that you have in this comic book?
Okay, well, the most famous, notorious one is Jumbo Shrimp, who is a dwarf who has the powers to grow, Godzilla size. So whenever he gets angry, he gets set off and, you know, turns large. And his name is Jumbo Shrimp. And there's a whole, he's got a little horde of bad guys. I don't even think some of them got names, but one of them was Rasta Alfredo. Like I said, it's kind of like The Tick. I just was like, let's go silly with it, you know?
We do panels on horrible stereotypes. Is there a horrible stereotype that you find endearing?
Okay, well, we kind of talked about this off camera because I didn't know if mine qualified. I am a sucker for B-movie, sci-fi, 50s, like, you know, big robots and especially big guys in rubber suits stepping on cardboard cities type. Like, there's a part of me as a kid that used to watch it like Sunday morning, black and white. And it's never lost its shine, you know?
Oh, yeah. Back when I was a kid, it was Creature Double Feature every Sunday, and I loved it.
Costello, and then, you know, some kind of creature show. Yeah, so I love that stuff.
Now, is there a character out there, a real supervillain that you like to draw getting his butt kicked?
Getting his butt kicked? Oh, man. I don't know, because there's cool villains I'd like to draw, you know, just because they're cool. But I don't know if Darkseid from the, was it the fourth universe, the Kirby stuff? He's cool as hell. But, yeah, maybe Superman kicking his butt.
All right, and is there a favorite lame villain that you like?
Oh, lame villain. Ooh, that's a tough one. No, I can't think. Nothing's coming off the top of my head. Yeah, how's it going?
One of my favorites is Stilt Man.
Stilt Man, yeah, he is pretty lame. Okay, I'll take yours. I'll do Stilt Man, too.
All right, and is there a couple out there that you really like to draw?
A couple? Oh, you mean like a duo of some kind? No, because they start getting in on a page, it quickly becomes 30. There's no... Fantastic Four would be the smallest little group that's fun, you know?
And how can people see your work?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff on Comixology from Marvel and DC. Just search my name. I've also got tons of back issues in most comic shops. So, yeah, just look me up online. I think there's all these little, like, Wikipedia, you know, every comic you ever drew is cataloged somewhere. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, that's about all the time we have tonight, and that was a terrific interview. Let's do a little bit of plugs. My favorite plug for this coming month is going to be in June 4th, I believe. We're all going to be in Pennsylvania for Pennsylvania Wizard World. Everybody looking forward to that?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get bursting through a wall.
It takes place right across from the Reading Terminal, and if you go into Reading Terminal... Every day but Sunday, they have these Amish people that are making these donuts. And I swear to God, I had one of those donuts, and it felt like heaven pooped in my mouth. It was so delicious.
And that donut could technically kill you. Is that correct? You're diabetic?
It could. I mean, I am diabetic, but it was almost worth it.
In so fact, you're
that's
saying
your suicide plan is to get a dozen of those donuts and a 2-liter bottle of Coke.
So you're willing to risk death for an Amish donut?
It was just like heaven pooped in your mouth, I swear to God.
He's thinking of it more as the rapture than death.
Creamy feel to it. It had bacon bits on it, for God's sake.
Well, how could you have resisted it? It had bacon bits on it. You're right.
That's right. If you want to go to Philadelphia Comic-Con to see the Longbox guys, come check us out. And if you want to commit suicide because you're a diabetic, go check out those donuts.
Get the Elvis donut. It is delicious.
I'm in on the donuts. Just saying.
Oh, I'm a cop. I have to get the donuts.
I'm also a diabetic. I'm rolling the dice with the donuts.
All right, roll those dice together.
So if donut we stop dice. Broadcasting in June, everybody knows why. The donuts have killed us all.
Hey, I'm only pre-diabetic, so I can have a donut. You diabetic guys, just, you know. Just watch me eat these sons of bitches. Well, that's all the plugs we have today. Everyone go get a donut. Plugs, no. We plug the donuts.
I've got more plugs.
Oh, my God.
How can I do a show and not plug IanLino.com?
I want one.
IanLino.com for very fine T-shirts and other geek wear. And also, tonight's episode brought to us by Scotch. Yes, Scotch, a delicious treat for everyone. Scotch, it's what's for breakfast.
And dinner, because I'm having it now. Josh, what do you got to plug?
No, I'm going with the Philly Comic Con and donuts. I'm in Philly on the donuts. Totally in on the donuts.
I just want to plug our Twitter account one more time. That's the Long Box Guys. Just go look for us over there. And, Mike, what do you got to plug?
I would like to plug Space City Comic Con. It's going to be in Houston May 27th to 29th. Still waiting to find out if they've scheduled us for our panel on horrible stereotypes out there. Otherwise, I'll be out there because I got a press pass, and I am going to be covering it for Thinking Outside the Long Box. If you want to email us, you can reach any of us by either saying Josh, Tom, LT, or Mike at thinkingoutsidethelongbox.com. So please, if you got some questions, comments, or want to hear a specific topic for us to, or a comic book for us to talk about, go ahead and email us. Or you could always tweet us. What's the tweet again, Tom?
That Twitter account is Outside the Long Box at the Long Box Guys. And I want to say welcome to new subscriber Jesse Cressy, better known to the wrestling world as ODB. ODB is now following us because we are friends. She's coming up for Memphis Made. Well, she's trying to come up for Memphis Made Barbecue Fest, and I've offered her the services of our smoker. She has a delicious barbecue sauce, and I hope to see her again. She was a delight when we saw her down in New Orleans, and just a real funny, funny person.
We also need to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. Check out Kirby Crackle at kirbycrackle.com or go to iTunes and buy their music. I also want to plug one more thing before we go, if that's all right with you guys. And I'm the editor, so I will say, yes, it is okay with you guys because I can put it in later anyways. I would like to plug our friends over at NolaNerd.com. NolaNerdCouple.com. Yeah, I forgot there were two of them. So go check out their blog, and the links for all the blogs of all our friends are on our website, outsidethelongbox.com.
Yeah, that's terrific. And Josh, what do we like to say at the end of every single episode?
We like to say, don't diss what you hate. No, diss what you hate. You do this one.
No, it's don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
That's right. Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
Are you sure that's it?
That doesn't sound right to me.
It sounds like
the exact opposite of all the internet. That's why I like to say it, guys. There's enough hate out there. There's enough people saying what you don't like. We're going to be the exact opposite of every single hipster on the planet. We're not going to diss what we hate. We're just going to promote what we love. Civil War is coming out. I can't wait to talk about it next week. Guys, from all of us at Outside the Long Box, have a great weekend.
Wide eyes. So say if you want to, you can call me Uatu. Can I watch you? And you can watch me too. So say if you want to, you can call me Uatu.